It is Thursday, June 1st, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, U.S. President Donald Trump will announce his decision on the Paris Climate Accord. The state of Ohio sues drug makers it accuses of causing the opioid crisis. We talk with a drug safety expert.
To a large degree, this is a uniquely American phenomenon. And I think other countries are sometimes puzzled with respect to just how bad things have gotten in the United States.
And country musicians pay tribute to the late Greg Allman. It's all ahead. President Donald Trump is expected to announce later Thursday whether he will pull the United States out of the UN Framework Convention on Climate Change, known as the Paris Agreement, backed by nearly 200 nations. The U.S. signed the pact in April 2016, obligating it to voluntarily reduce greenhouse gas emissions by up to 28% of 2005 levels. Many scientists and world leaders say man-made greenhouse gases, such as carbon dioxide from burning fossil fuels, are slowly warming the planet, causing detrimental environmental changes. Skeptics question the science, insist climate changes are natural occurrences, and the Paris Accord will result in slower growth and higher energy costs. Economist Gary Huffbauer of the Washington-based Peterson Institute tells International Edition's Victor Beatty, even with an announcement to pull out, it would take the U.S. up to 3 years to legally withdraw from the Paris Accord.
A statement by President Trump that the U.S. is leaving the Paris Accord doesn't really trigger any enforcement action by other countries and probably is more a statement, a declaration of intent than an actual leaving of the accord. Now, all that being said, I think other countries, including China, which is the biggest emitter or the second biggest after the U.S., were kind of neck and neck on this. I think they'll all stay in and do what they're currently doing to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. But it will put the U.S. in a bad light. It's a symbolic gesture, a symbolic rejection of the importance of climate change, whether it does very much right away to speed up the trajectory of carbon emissions, to me, is quite doubtful, but it certainly doesn't accelerate the reduction of carbon, on the other hand.
From your vantage point as an economist, if the U.S. stayed in the Paris Climate Accord, would it cost U.S. jobs?
No. The thing that's happened is that since this was originally talked about, natural gas has become a new fuel for electricity, and who knows, it may soon become a fuel for autos. I don't know, but at least for generating electricity, the substitution of natural gas for coal has already brought the U.S., I think the number is about 12% below the 2005 baseline. That's a good distance from the 28%, but it's progress. And further adoption just for straight commercial reasons of solar and wind, because now they're just much, much cheaper than they were 10 or 15 years ago. They're quite competitive in many cases. We'll bring another at least 5 or 8%. Where the rubber hits the road is probably after about 2022 or 2023, when we've run out of those kind of effects, which are just by natural market forces reducing our carbon emission. At that point, to stay on the Paris schedule, we would have to adopt some kind of measures to discourage the use of gasoline and coal and diesel and so forth. But that's a ways away, and maybe new technology will come in the meantime.
That's Gary Huffbauer of the Peterson Institute. He said the political component of the Paris Accord is aimed at encouraging countries like China, Pakistan, Indonesia, and India, heavy users of fossil fuels like coal for electricity, to curb their rapidly rising carbon emissions in favor of alternate energy sources. Well, joining me here in the studio is social media editor Andrew Palshevsky. So, Andrew, what's happening?
two big developments in the ongoing investigation into Russia's interference in the U.S. presidential election. The first involves Nigel Farage. He is the former U.K. Independence Party leader, a big campaigner for Brexit, and big Trump campaign surrogate. He's reportedly a person of interest in that FBI investigation. So this adds a new international component to this investigation. Therefore, Nigel Farage is trending worldwide as people are talking about this. He has come out and said that reports of this FBI investigation and him being a person of interest are fake news, a term that we've heard quite a lot from Trump officials. But Nigel Farage, being the polarizing figure that he is, has not stopped the internet with those comments from creating fake wanted posters, photoshopping photos of Farage in disguise, and people hoping that he will be investigated and all other things. There are people coming to his defense, though, saying that he is just part of the campaign. This is not going to lead to anything, echoing some of the statements that he's made. But he is the latest name that is trending as this goes on. And another name that we've heard trending time and time again, James Comey, the former FBI director. It's been announced that he's going to testify in front of the Senate Intelligence Committee June 8th, 10 a.m. Eastern Time. So people are already setting their calendar saying it's going to be the biggest summer blockbuster. It really is going to be an anticipated event on Capitol Hill, probably biggest event on Capitol Hill in years, some are saying on social media. So that anticipation about what Comey might say, anticipation about the questions he might be asked, and a lot of people wanting that what did the president know and when did he know it moment that we saw in the Watergate hearings from Senator Howard Baker, some kind of big moment like that. But one great use of social media, Senator Joe Manchin from West Virginia tweeting out and urging his constituents to send him questions to ask on the committee. So he will
That's
be soliciting questions via social media. I think it's the first time that we've seen that in one of these types of hearings. So we'll see if he gets any good ones from his West Virginian constituents.
I bet you he might get at least one or two.
I think so.
Okay, thanks a lot, Andrew. That's social media editor Andrew Pelshevsky. Here are some of the top news stories trending. The Islamic State is barricading a symbolic mosque for a last stand in Mosul. President Trump will keep the U.S.-Israeli embassy in Tel Aviv for now. Hundreds of businesses urge President Trump to stay in the Paris climate deal, and the former Republican head of a congressional Russia probe is accused by Democrats of launching his own investigation. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on the VOANews.com website. This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
A new study concerning string theory was recently released by mechanical engineers at the University of California, Berkeley. Before you think this concerns a quantum or particle physics hypothesis, this study concerns shoestrings, specifically why our shoelaces manage to keep getting untied. They found out that the failure of a shoelace knot takes place in just a few seconds and is set off by a series of complex force reactions that act like an invisible hand. These forces loosen the knot and then tug on the free ends of the laces until they become undone. While tying shoelaces as tightly as possible will still result in the knot becoming untied eventually, doing so at least will give you more time before you have to stop and retie your shoes compared to laces tied loosely. I give my shoelaces a double bow to keep them secure. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, scientists supercharge a powerful antibiotic. The U.S. state of Ohio filed a lawsuit this week against five prescription drug manufacturers, saying they'd used deceptive practices that fueled an opioid addiction epidemic. The state wants the companies to stop misrepresenting the drugs, to pay damages for the amount of money the state spent on excessive opioid prescriptions and resulting addiction treatment for patients, and to reimburse patients as well. Dr. Caleb Alexander is co-director of the Johns Hopkins Center for Drug Safety and Effectiveness. I asked him whether he believes the Ohio lawsuit is appropriate.
Well, there's certainly no question that opioids have been aggressively marketed and promoted. And one of the big concerns here is that both patients and providers have overestimated the effectiveness of these medicines and underestimated their risks. So I think the effort to try to hold drug companies accountable for what has been, in some cases, overzealous marketing is an important one.
How addictive are these opioids?
Well, opioids are highly addictive. And if you look at the chemical structure of prescription opioids and compare that to heroin, they're virtually indistinguishable. And unfortunately, I think both clinicians and patients have tended to underestimate the addictive potential of these products.
And apparently some people, I guess when they're not able to obtain the opioids anymore, they then turn to heroin.
Yeah, I mean, the epidemic of heroin and illicit fentanyl use is related to, but a bit distinct from the prescription opioid epidemic. There's no question that a small proportion of prescription opioid users do turn to heroin or illicit fentanyl, but the vast majority of individuals that have opioid use disorders and that may be addicted to prescription opioids are not using heroin or illicit fentanyl.
Now, I have read that one of the reasons this has become an increasing problem is because in the past, a number of years ago, doctors would prescribe these kinds of drugs just on a short-term basis. But apparently now they're prescribing them more for chronic conditions.
Well, it's important to emphasize that prescription opioids serve an invaluable role in the treatment of patients at the end of life and also for patients that have severe acute pain. Where we've really run into problems is with the use of prescription opioids for chronic non-cancer pain, so conditions such as headaches or fibromyalgia or lower back pain. These are common and chronic conditions where in many, many cases the risks of opioids outweigh the benefits.
Has this been a problem internationally in countries around the world?
Many countries struggle with prescription opioids and how to best balance their benefits and risks. But the United States really stands out from the pack. Unfortunately, the United States has a far worse epidemic than any other country around the world. And the statistics are startling. Consider, for example, that the United States accounts for just 5% of the world's population, and yet 80% of prescription opioids consumed. This is, to a large degree, this is a uniquely American phenomenon. And I think other countries are sometimes puzzled with respect to just how bad things have gotten in the United States.
Why are they worse in the U.S. in regard to this than in other countries?
Well, the United States is an enormous market for prescription drugs, and so the incentives for drug companies to see high sales of these products are much greater in the United States than many other countries around the world. The products have also been marketed and promoted more heavily in the United States than many other countries. And also the cultures are different. And in many other countries around the world, clinicians may not be as ready to reach for prescription opioids in the types of settings where they reach for them in the United States.
Dr. Caleb Alexander, co-director of the Johns Hopkins Center for Drug Safety and Effectiveness. Several states, in addition to Ohio, have filed lawsuits against drug companies concerning opioids. Well, in other drug news, scientists have tweaked a powerful antibiotic called vancomycin, so it's once more potent against life-threatening bacterial infections. Antibiotic resistance has become an urgent global public health problem, and experts say revamping existing antibiotics is an important advance. VOA's Jessica Berman reports.
The overuse and misuse of antibiotics to treat common bacterial infections has led to a growing problem of antibiotic resistance around the world. Illnesses once successfully treated with wonder drugs no longer respond to them, endangering the lives of patients. In addition to trying to come up with new antibiotics that pathogens are sensitive to, researchers are working to retool existing drugs. The latest success story comes out of the Scripps Research Institute in La Jolla, California, where scientists modified vancomycin, a drug that was invented 60 years ago and considered a last resort against many bacterial illnesses. they made a key change to its molecular structure, interfering with how the bacterium Enterococcus makes protective cell walls. In a study published in the journal Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences, investigators describe how the change made vancomycin 1,000 times more effective against both drug-resistant enterococci bacteria and the original forms of the microorganism. The director of the Office of Antimicrobial Resistance at the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention in Atlanta, Georgia, is Jean Patel.
Modifying vancomycin and now making it a drug that's active even against bacteria that were previously resistant is helpful. It means that we have the potential to make the most of an old drug and to revitalize that old drug.
In a report on antimicrobial resistance, the World Health Organization called it a profound threat to human health. Patel says it's hard to get a handle on the exact extent of the problem because many countries do not have adequate laboratory testing facilities to report their findings. Patel says fighting antimicrobial resistance with new and better drugs is important, but a comprehensive approach is what's needed.
We need to have good infection control. We need to make sure that we're using antibiotics appropriately. We need good diagnostics in order to detect the resistance that occurs. So it's really this multi-pronged approach that's going to be effective. And just relying on the production of new drugs alone isn't going to do it.
Patel adds no country has been spared antibiotic resistance, and unless there's a global effort to contain it, the problem of drug failures will continue unabated. Jessica Berman, VOA News, Washington.
This is VOA.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there. Bringing you news as it happens. Listen to Africa News Tonight, Monday through Friday at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our five-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Hi, this is Larry London, the host of VOA's Border Crossing. I feature music and interviews with your favorite artists from all around the world. And you can not only listen, but you can interact live with us here in Washington, D.C. Border Crossings comes to you Monday through Friday at 1500 UTC GMT on VOA.
This is International Edition. This week, country music is mourning the death of Southern rock pioneer Greg Allman. He was a founding member of the legendary group The Allman Brothers. Nikki Strong of VOA One is here to share how country music is coming together to honor his rich legacy. So, Nikki, talk about The Allman Brothers' influence on country music.
Well, the Allman Brothers influenced so many people. I know Jason Aldean, I think, refers to Greg Allman as one of his heroes. So you have the late Dwayne and now Greg. They were really the driving force behind one of the greatest Southern rock and roll bands of all time. And they were pioneers of Southern rock, which helped pave the way for others to become commercial successes. So one of the building blocks of Southern rock is country, as well as rock and roll and blues. And so when the Allman Brothers came on the national scene, they had a blues rock sound that drew upon country and folk. But then they would also incorporate elements of jazz and classical music. And they had this live jam band style. So it was a blend that was really dynamic. And then you had Greg's really soulful, bluesy, nuanced vocals, which continued to add texture. And it was the way they blended all of these influences that made them, I think, particularly special. One thing I do find fascinating, though, is that their biggest hit, Ramblin' Man, was more inspired by country than their other work.
Oh, it's interesting.
Yes, and it was inspired by the country legend Hank Williams' song of the same name, too. And they were a little hesitant to record it because they thought it was too country for them. But they went ahead, and it was the song that really made them a household name. I mean, it just propelled them. It broke down barriers. It was their only top 10 single on the Billboard Hot 100 chart. Wow. Yeah, and Chris Stapleton, he expressed that he would always be grateful for the wealth of musical influence Greg and the Allman Brothers provided. And I think that's what they represented for many people in country and rock and beyond. Billy Gibbons of ZZ Top, he said that the group defined the best of every music from the American South in that time. They were the best of all of us. And then the president of Country Music Television, CMT, Brian Phillips, he recently said the Allman Brothers Band, quote, helped create the bedrock foundation of modern Southern music. And of course, that includes country. That's major, isn't it?
What a tribute. Wow.
Yeah.
Well, CMT is slated to do a tribute to the Allman Brothers at their award show.
Exactly. So Brian Phillips of CMT, he also explained that the tribute came together because of the artist. So after Greg Allman's death, artists kept inquiring because the show was coming up and they wanted to do different ways of honoring him. So they decided to put a tribute together.
And when will it take place?
So the show, the CMT Music Awards, they're going to air June 7th on the CMT Network. And of course, we'll have snippets of it on our Facebook and Twitter pages at VOA One The Hits. And so far, we definitely know Jason Aldean, Charles Kelly of Lady Antebellum, and Darius Rucker will be part of the tribute. But I also think it's important to add that many artists, aside from the CMT tribute, have been posting their own performances honoring Greg Allman and the Allman Brothers, and so I encourage others to check those out as well.
Well, you can hear more about the Allman Brothers and those who have been influenced by Greg Allman's music on VOA One's Country Hits with Nikki Strong. You can also reach Nikki on Facebook and Twitter at VOA One The Hits. Thanks a lot, Nikki.
You're welcome.
Lord, I was born a rambling man, trying to make a living and doing the best I can. And when it's time for leaving, I hope you'll understand that I was born a rambling man.
Well, the sounds of the Allman Brothers and Ramblin' Man brings an end to our show. Please remember to visit our website at voanews.com. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks so much for joining us.
Next, an international public service announcement by the United States government.
The U.S. Department of State's Rewards for Justice program is offering a reward of up to $5 million for information leading to the arrest or conviction in any country of any individual who committed, conspired to commit, or aided or abetted in the commission of the murder of U.S. citizen Joel Shrum. On March 18, 2012, Shrum, 29, was shot and killed on his way to work in Taiz, Yemen, by a gunman riding on the back of a motorcycle that had pulled up alongside his vehicle. At the time of his death, Shrum was an administrator and English teacher at the International Training and Development Center, one of the longest-standing international development organizations in Yemen. A few days after the attack, the terrorist organization Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula claimed responsibility for the murder. Since its inception in 1984, the Rewards for Justice program has paid in excess of $125 million to more than 80 people who provided actionable information that helped bring terrorists to justice or prevented acts of international terrorism worldwide. You can follow Rewards for Justice on Twitter. @rewards4justice. More information about the Shrum Reward offer is located on the Rewards for Justice website at www.rewardsforjustice.net. Anyone with information on this case can contact the Rewards for Justice office via the website, email info@rewardsforjustice.net, phone 1-800-877-3927 in North America, or mail Rewards for Justice, Washington, D.C., 20520-0303, USA. All information will be kept strictly confidential.
That was an international public service announcement by the United States government.